This is what you may know about the Salt Lake Airport security breach.
You know, at one point there's a video of him sitting Indian style on the moving walkway. If someone had just put his arm around him and said, "Hey buddy, can we help?" it could have saved his life.
What you may not know is that the man who died suffered from bipolar disorder. This hour, the Kyler Effinger story. Our hosts are Dave Noriega and Debbie Dujanovic on KSL News Radio.
For Kyler Effinger, the first day of 2024 was the final day of his life. His chilling last moments made national and local news.
Learning more about the death of a Park City man.
30-year-old Kyler inexplicably breached an emergency exit at Salt Lake International Airport.
Then, in the cover of darkness, tore on foot across a runway, undressed, and climbed into an engine cover of a commercial airplane, prepping for takeoff. As passengers in other planes were warned by their pilots, flights were being halted.
They put his body into an ambulance, and the ambulance didn't drive away. And I know that if that happens, then they're no longer living.
What you can't spot in the airport's grainy surveillance video, captured in the moments leading up to his death, is Kyler had bipolar disorder. His dad, Judd, is speaking out about his son's battle.
You know, if 100,000 people saw him that day, not one single person stopped to help him. You know, at one point, there's a video of him sitting Indian style on the moving walkway, and he's just, and everyone's just going to the side and avoiding him. But, you know, not violent. He didn't have a violent bone in his body. But I just think he needed someone to put his arm, you know, their arm around him and say, "Hey, buddy, what's going on? Can I help you?"
When did you start focusing in or cluing in that Kyler might be dealing with some mental health issues? What age was he, and when did you start noticing some potential trouble for him?
Yeah, great question. You know, these things, you know, you kind of play back. After his death, we've kind of played back and tried to, you know, maybe pinpoint that. And really the only thing as a child, I would say, is he was maybe slightly hyperactive. I mean, you know, always just full of energy. You know, he started every day by coming down the slide of his bunk bed, and, you know, you could hear the thud and running around. And, you know, he was just, yeah, really full of love as a kid. But he was never diagnosed with ADHD. But I would just say hyperactive, and we're actually trying to do some research on really whether ADHD is a precursor to some of these more serious mental disorders, and, you know, hoping to get to the bottom of that. But that would really be the only sign. So all the way through high school, he really was just a happy boy. I would say the earliest, you know, signs of his mental well-being really were maybe sophomore year in high school. He was bullied, and, you know, hard to know why bullies do what they do, but he was just a kid they, you know, enjoyed picking on. That continued, you know, through college. So those really are the first, you know, known signs.
As you were describing that, it sounds so common to, you know, most parents, you know, the kind of stuff that you just wouldn't give a second thought, like, oh, extra energetic kid, or, you know, they've had some problems with some friends at school. But I really would like to focus on the bullying aspect of it, because I know that is such a focus in Utah schools. They're trying to get their arms around it, and they're not quite sure what to do. They've thrown a lot of stuff against the wall. But what kind of bullying did he experience?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, mental bullying. You know, I don't think it was too physical. You know, although the first time I was exposed to it, you know, I was called to the principal's office, for a fight. You know, so he did fight back, and that was, you know, probably sophomore or junior year. I would say, yeah, more of the mental, you know, just, yeah, trying to get under his skin. And yeah, I mean, he played on a soccer team. I think he was actually bullied on the soccer team, even though they were his friends. They just enjoyed picking on him. And, you know, he was just one of those kids that really didn't understand, you know, why someone would be mean to another human. He just wasn't built for that.
So what did his the end of his high school career, I guess, look like as he had dealt with some of these bullying situations? You know, you just kind of blast through school, get through it. Did you notice something changing as he became a junior or a senior?
Yeah, so senior year, you know, we had another, you know, principal episode, you know, where, you know, I had to come in and he had been, you know, in an altercation with another student or students. And after that, both the school, you know, I guess I can't remember exactly what departments, you know, these are, but, you know, a counselor at the school, you know, recommended that he see a therapist. And so the school had a recommended therapist. And so he did senior year do some therapy. Now, I don't recall it being that long. You know, Kyler, like a bunch of kids, you know, who have some mental health issues, he wanted nothing more than to be normal. And, you know, he really saw the bullies. You know, I guess one of the things they bullied him on is, hey, kid, you need special help. And so he always kind of fought back against that and saw that, you know, hey, I'm not going to let the bullies win. So he did his therapy that the school asked him to, but, you know, 5-6 sessions, something like that. And then he, you know, told us he was fine and chose not to go back to therapy.
When did you and his mom or even his sister as a family start to notice things were getting really difficult when it came to his mental health? What age was he and what was happening?
Yeah. So that's actually a freshman year at the University of Utah. He did rush to paternity. I really can't even remember what the name of it was. It's unimportant. But, you know, yeah, I had a call one night at like 3:00 in the morning where one of his friends called and I had to rush down there. And, you know, I found him like literally in the middle of a, you know, fraternity house on the floor. They had shaven his head and we're dumping, you know, beer all over him. I mean, it was really just a tragedy. And shortly after that, he had his first, you know, what we would call official manic episode.
Next, Kyler's first manic episode.
Dave and Debbie discuss mental health, politics, and the week's biggest stories weekday mornings. Listen tomorrow starting at 9 for conversation and analysis on KSL News Radio.
On New Year's Day, Park City resident Kyler Effinger was flying out of Salt Lake International to visit his grandfather. His dad believes Kyler was suffering a manic episode in the terminal when Kyler did the unthinkable.
His father, Judd, just told us Kyler's first episode came when he was in college. His father called to a fraternity house to find his son on the floor, doused in beer. What was that like as a father to see your son in that situation?
Whew, yeah. I mean, you know, any father can speak to this. It's just, I mean, it just grabs you right on your heartstrings. And, you know, I happen to have a German temper as well. So, you know, there was a bit of temper going on as well. And I just asked them all to leave the room because I wasn't going to be able to deal with them. And they did, respectfully. But yeah, it was just, you know, super tragic. And, you know, at that time, we were just trying to get him. You know, he obviously had drank too much. And who knows, you know, how that happened, you know, with these fraternity members. But we just wanted to make sure he was safe, and we did get him home and got him safe. But shortly after, I can't recall if it was 2 or 3 days, but he did have a manic episode after that.
What happened during that manic episode, Judd?
Yeah, so, you know, so Kyler probably, you know, in his 10-year battle, you know, probably had four, you know, true manic episodes. You know, so it's, you know, it's just super scary as a parent. You know, they just stop thinking straight. You know, for him, it was visions of grandeur. You know, on some of them, he thought he was Jesus Christ and, you know, he was going to save the world. Other times, you know, it was more of a physical elevation where he, you know, wanted to run across the nature preserve in his underwear. You know, so all of those ended, you know, with us calling the police. And, you know, at the time, there really weren't enough resources or any different resources on the mental health side. So that really was your only avenue. You know, we would call the hospital would say, hey, you really have to call the police. The, you know, police, you know, would ask those typical questions. Is he harming himself or anyone else? And, you know, all these things at the time, again, 10 years ago, you know, you just didn't have good answers to that. So we would almost have to wait for it to be so elevated, you know, that the police could get involved.
I would imagine as a parent, I don't know if you have any training or expertise in this area, but I would feel so hopeless and unprepared. I wouldn't know what to do. Did you have any of those feelings?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. You know, I just happen to be someone who, you know, is inquisitive. So, and my wife, and so we just researched the heck out of it and tried to get as much information as we could. And it's helpful. And again, you know, think of this 10 years ago, I think mental health has come a long way since then. But that first episode, you know, ended, he was laying down in the middle of a highway. And, you know, we really don't think he was trying to, you know, harm himself, you know, or commit suicide. It really is just not thinking straight at all. And so cars had stopped, thankfully, and someone had called the police. And so, you know, so that ends up, you know, really is a police episode, right? Rather than a mental health episode. So they have to take him to the police station. They have to put him in a cell. I think he spent, you know, probably 3 days in the cell. It's very difficult as a parent to try to get them, you know, there's just certain, you know, gates that they have to go through. Eventually we were able to get, you know, get him to, UNI, which is, you know, the University of Utah Mental Health. Not sure what that acronym actually stands for. But anyways, he did spend, you know, a number of visits at UNI, you know, which is their mental health hospital. And those were typically 3 to 4 week stays, you know, really to get him down from that elevated manic state.
Did you feel that at least when he was at UNI, that you knew he was safe?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. I mean, that's definitely what goes through your heart. You know, your mind is saying, oh gosh, I can't believe my kid's at a mental health hospital. Your heart's saying, whew, at least he's safe. And, you know, these manic episodes are just desperate for a family. You know, it's just amazing. You know, you can't sleep at night. You don't know where they are or what they're doing. It's, you know, at this point, he's an adult too, which, you know, adds another level of complexity to it. But anyways, yes, while he was in the hospital, we did feel like he was safe. You know, they do start off with a pretty heavy dose of medication to get him, you know, down from the manic state, and rightfully so. And then they slowly wean him off to the point where, you know, they can get him, you know, really ready to be, you know, to enter back into society. But each of those progressive visits, we felt like they were progressing as well, you know, Kyler and the team down there. So, you know, as mental health is getting more, you know, funding, you know, I just think their, you know, sort of resources got better and better.
Next, Kyler misses his flight out of Salt Lake International. Hours later, he was dead.
This is what you may know about the Salt Lake Airport security breach.
You know, at one point there's a video of him sitting Indian style on the moving walkway. If someone had just put his arm around him and said, hey buddy, can we help? It could have saved his life.
What you may not know is that the man who died suffered from bipolar disorder. This hour, the Kyler Effinger story. Our hosts are Dave Noriega and Debbie Dujanovic on KSL News Radio.
We're speaking with Judd Effinger, the father of Kyler. Judd is about to take us through Kyler's final hours at Salt Lake International Airport on New Year's Day.
Kyler was about to fly out to visit his ill grandpa. when he experienced his final manic episode, flinging open an emergency exit door, running across a runway, throwing himself into an engine cowling of a commercial airplane.
Take us to kind of that the fateful day or the few days leading up to it, and walk us through some of that, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So, you know, so this will pull at the heartstrings of parents and families as well. So Kyler did come up to Sun Valley for Christmas. You know, so this is just a week before his passing. And we probably had the best visit we've ever had with Kyler. I mean, it was just super special. You know, skied, went for snowshoes, you know, had these long talks about his future and starting a family. You know, just an awesome family week. And, you know, he actually left and texted on his way home that it was the best Christmas ever. So it just shows how fragile this bipolar disorder is, you know, to be the best ever and then dead the next week. It's just a tragedy.
Did he seem like that normal, happy kid that you talked about in his childhood on that Christmas?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Kyler's somewhere in that, you know, call it halfway through that decade journey. He did choose to self-medicate. And so he went and got his cannabis license, medical marijuana license in Utah. And that was his choice. You know, at that point, he's 25 years old or something. And so he did use cannabis, and it did make him feel better. It wasn't necessarily comfortable for our family. So even at Christmas, you know, we had to send him outside to do what he was doing. But what I'll say is he was level for, he's kept the same job as a night attendant, you know, at the Holiday Inn for 3.5 years. And so, you know, a fairly normal life. It was helpful. We did get warnings and were told by his medical doctors that, you know, this is not a proven technology or science. And worse, some of the research, you know, shows that it does actually increase the potential of the manic state, you know, that it elevates that manic state. I think that's probably what we saw on New Year's Day is the worst manic episode he's ever had.
Remind us what happened. There was another death in the family, right?
You know, so, you know, actually my father, a tough old bugger, has not passed away. He is home in hospice in Colorado, but it was, you know, a third heart attack and you know, 10% heart function, sent home, you know, really to pass, you know, right after Christmas. So 2 days after Christmas. And so that was what set, you know, I think Kyler off. He you know, called, you know, maybe 2 days, you know, end of December and said, "Hey, I've just got to get out and see grandpops." And I said, "Well, you know, it sounds like, you know, you still have work to do." So we worked most of the weekends, or mostly on the weekends. And so I was like, "You know, how about if you at least get through your Sunday shift and we can talk about it, you know, on New Year's Day." And so he called bright and early. You know, this is another, I guess, a symptom or, you know, something I just want other families to know is when Kyler got close to manic, he actually would stop sleeping. And so sleeping behaviors are just a real trigger. And so something to keep an eye on for other families. And, you know, I really think he maybe went a week without sleeping. And it just totally sets off this manic behavior. But again, you're feeling so alive and well and energized in this state that you can't sleep. And so you just keep going. And I think that totally led to, you know, to his final episode.
And he gets to the airport to go see his grandpa.
Yeah. So, you know, so this, yeah, another thing, you know, that as a parent, I've got to live with, I sent him a ticket that morning, mostly because I just didn't think an 8 or 9 hour drive sounded any better. You know, certainly I could kind of sense he was getting elevated again, but we were sort of buoyed by this just awesome Christmas visit. So, you know, I just maybe missed it. So yeah, he goes to the airport, you know, it's New Year's Day. You know, we're being told there was as many as 100,000 people at the airport. He maybe shows up too late. You know, the texts I got from him were, I'm stuck in line. Can I use your clear card? And I'm like, no, I don't think you can. And then his texts are, I think I'm being profiled. So he happened to have dreadlocks and just, you know, maybe at this point, maybe he is showing some signs of manic. And so he does get taken aside. You know, again, I don't know all the details of that, but his text to us where I'm being profiled. I have no idea if that's true or not. But he does spend a lot of time, you know, in TSA. And so he eventually misses his flight. And so then that's maybe the next text I get is, what, you know, what should I do? And so, you know, I just went online and tried to find the next flight. He didn't want to wait for the next flight to Colorado Springs. So he wanted to fly to Denver and drive down. So that was his plan. You know, that unfortunately was a 4 hour difference. So it was like 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock was the next flight. And so those are his last 4 hours. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen some of the video, you know, that a lot of that's been posted online. I mean, he is just highly manic in these videos. And this is the thing that, again, you know, we hope to change. I mean, as a society, we just have to do better. If 100,000 people saw him that day, not one single person stopped to help him. You know, at one point, there's a video of him sitting Indian style on the moving walkway, and he's just, and everyone's just going to the side and avoiding him. But, you know, not violent. He didn't have a violent bone in his body. But just, you know, I just think he needed someone to put his arm, you know, their arm around him and say, hey, buddy, what's going on? Can I help you? And that's everything from the Christians that are walking by him to staff, right? I mean, amazing to me that for 4 hours he managed to avoid, you know, anyone helping him, including professionals. We really hope that our efforts can maybe help the next family that's going through that.
Yeah, I've seen some of the videos. I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen some, and I thought to myself, somebody help this kid. I mean,
Right. I mean, he just needs help. I mean, I know the kid well enough, or knew him well enough, that if someone had just put his arm around him and said, "Hey, buddy, you know, looks like you're having a bad day. Can we help?" I think it could have saved his life.
When did you figure out, or did you almost know right away when the news was breaking that there was a death at the Salt Lake International Airport in a most unusual way? Did you know it was Kyler?
Yeah. So, you know, that's maybe the worst part of the story is, you know, so we had a bunch of lights flashing and, you know, outside our bedroom window that evening, like 1 or 1:30. And two police officers from the Haley, Idaho Police Department knocked on our door. And, you know, it's that knock that no parent ever wants to answer. So they did, you know, tell us that evening.
When I'm watching these videos and watching it unfold, I guess my assumption, because there's so much security at the airport, it all feels so locked down in so many ways. When I first heard that he got out, you know, onto the tarmac and into these restricted areas, I couldn't help but think, like, how in the world does that happen? And we've spoken to people that have worked at the airport, and they say, yeah, there are access areas, you know, where people come and go, and where they're inside and out. And I guess there was more accessibility than I realized.
Yeah, you know, the same. You know, I'm a frequent flyer, so I'm at a lot of airports. And yeah, I always think of them as being highly secure. You know, so we're still not sure. You know, we hope the police report has some of that. But the investigation did close, so we hope to be able to get some of that information. Prior to that, we really haven't been told much. You know, it's an ongoing investigation, and you'll have to wait for the final report. So we've been patient. You know, we also, you know, wanted to grieve as a family and get through his memorial service. But anyways, I think that is maybe the next phase is, you know, what can we do to help airport security and mental health challenges? You know, it just feels to me like airports are maybe the most stressful place you can be in our society. And, you know, maybe a mental health specialist on staff all the time would be a really wise decision for our airports.
Next, what Judd learned as a parent of a child with bipolar disorder.
You know, kids just need to know that they're not alone.
Dave and Debbie discuss mental health, politics, and the week's biggest stories weekday mornings. Listen tomorrow starting at 9 for conversation and analysis on KSL News Radio.
Outside of his manic episodes, Kyler Effinger had dark times too, because with bipolar also comes depression. His dad, Judd, says Kyler would spend months in the basement before he'd resurface.
He'd spend time at a psychiatric ward, gone on prescription medications to help him reset his mental health, and got himself back on track to hold jobs. But after a decade of coping, ultimately, Kyler's life was cut short when he suffered his final manic episode at a busy Salt Lake International Airport on New Year's Day in 2024.
Walk us through, Judd, what you want other families to know about bipolar disorder, some of the warning signs that maybe you missed or that you saw and you'd want other families to know about.
Yeah, excellent question. So we're actually, you know, registering a foundation for Kyler and in his honor, we're calling it Love Like Kai Foundation. And, you know, filing all that paperwork and getting, you know, the nonprofit status. And we hope to go around, at least to start, go around to mountain towns, because that's what we've known is Park City and Sun Valley. And it just seems like the mountain towns are, you know, there's an elevated state of mental health crisis. You know, I think it is a national issue, but it just does seem to be even more prevalent in these mountain towns. And so we're, you know, we've put a research team together. We're going to research, you know, some of that data and see if we can find, you know, studies to help other families. But the obvious ones to me, you know, first starts with, you know, unconditional love. You know, it took me as a father a while to get used to Kyler's state. You know, I want him to go back to school and get a job and, you know, all the things every father wants for their kid. What I found is that really just aided in his challenges. You know, he saw that as not understanding, and he saw it as being pressured into doing what I wanted him to do. So I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years into it, I just felt like I had to change. And so I did. I released all of that and just saw Kyler as my son and something I could do to, you know, anything I could do to help him. But he needed to drive the bus. It wasn't dad figuring that out. And my wife got that much earlier. She probably got it at childhood. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's a blessing on the unconditional love. So I'd start there. Second is maybe, you know, kids just need to know that they're not alone. And, you know, they all want to be normal and they just need to find a community that they can find and get resources and help with. And I don't think Kyler did enough of that. I wish he had done more. So, you know, really encourage families to find that community. And they're, you know, they're showing up. You know, more and more counties and cities are putting, you know, mental health communities together where they can spend some time together and work through the challenges. Third, I would say, you know, is this self-medication? It might make you feel better. And the next family that's put with that challenge, I would just say it is not a long-term solution. And at least in our case, it supports some of the research that cannabis is not a solution for mental health. And particularly in the adolescent brain, some of the studies I've read, it's not helpful at all. It actually increases the dysfunction, you know, the brain dysfunction. Those are the ones that I really want to help other families with is, are those issues. And yeah, I guess maybe the last one would be just how fragile, life is, and life with a family member with mental health issues. It's super fragile, and you can just never let your guard down. I think we maybe did. It was the best Christmas ever, but turned into the worst New Year's ever.
Thanks for listening. Join us this week, starting at 9 on KSL News Radio on the Dave and Dujanovic Show, when we will go in-depth on bipolar disorder and speak to an expert.
We'll ask about different treatments that are available. Again, that's Dave and Dujanovic, starting at 9.